This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan. In Malaysia, for every 100 ringgit in wages received by men, women only receive 66 ringgit. This is according to the Department of Statistics Malaysia's Gender Gap Index for 2022, which is their latest report. But what exactly does this mean? What are its consequences? So, in light of International Women's Day, which is observed tomorrow, the 8th of March, I will be speaking to Marina Abdullah, the head of campaigns at Women's Aid Organization, on this issue. Marina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So, Marina, what are your overall thoughts on the statistic I mentioned in the introduction? What does it tell you?
The gender pay gap, it's something that has been a topic of discussion for some time now. Malaysia's not really faring well in comparison to neighboring countries or even to our global friends. But we know that one of the big reasons for this gap is that women often work in industries or roles that pay less than those dominated by men. So if they were to enter a male-dominated industry, we know that there is a big gap in their pay. For example, more women work in fields like teaching or healthcare. And that generally already pays less than industries like engineering or finance. So even if they're in different industries, the gap is big. If they enter male-dominated industries, the gap is still there. It just comes to mind, there's this correlation between the gender pay gap and cultural expectations. There's still a lot of deeply rooted beliefs in society that the role of women in the home, in the private sphere, roles as caregivers or homemakers are mainly usually prioritized over their roles in the professional space or for their careers. And just this kind of cultural concept can really limit women's opportunities and then, you know, further exacerbating the gender pay gap.
Right. You brought up that we are not doing too well compared to neighboring countries. Could you paint a picture for us? How does the gender pay gap in Malaysia compare to countries across the region or even the world?
Malaysia is currently World Economic Forum's Global Gender Gap 2021. Malaysia is ranked 104 out of 156 countries in terms of gender wage equality. But if, let's say, to give something a little bit more relevant or closer to home, just in ASEAN, we are ranking the second last. The country right at the bottom is unfortunately Myanmar.
Right.
Which, you know, on their own, they have been going through some political turmoil and crisis. So we have kind of, it is very glaring that, you know, we are side by side with a country that is going through a lot.
Absolutely. I think it says a lot of the situation in our country that we are doing slightly better than a country that is going through military coup, a revolution, armed struggle, civil war, and so on and so forth. So what are the various factors contributing to this, widening pay gap in Malaysia and the fact that we are not doing too well on this regard compared to all our neighboring countries?
Going back to that point just now, I mean, absolutely what you just said, in comparison to a country that's going through so much, we are finding ourselves in a position that we should not be in. We look at limited workforce participation as one of the main things. Women's caregiving responsibilities at home, gender roles and gender stereotypes being expected of them, this limits their ability to fully participate in the workforce. If a woman is expected to have to balance work and caregiving duties, in the absence of supportive policies like affordable childcare services or flexible work arrangements, this on its own becomes a huge barrier for women to enter the workforce. And we have seen the numbers. Women, according to the 2018 Labour Force Survey report, 60.2% of women aren't in the workforce because of unpaid care duties like childcare, elder care, housework. And this is something that is going to persist if the support and the supportive policies are not implemented in order to fill and to fill this gap that women have to fill. Second to that, you know, biological factors like having a child can obviously mean a career interruption. So for women who take time off to take care of their children, obviously will be experiencing a need to be at home or to go through maternity leave. And we're very happy that there is an extension of maternity leave. However, these interruptions seem to bring about long-term consequences. So coming back into the workforce is not very friendly for women. It, in fact, having a child has direct implication on your career advancement and reduces your earning potential, whereas this should not be the case. We have seen in Nordic countries where maternity leave is extended up to a year and shared between husband and wife, right? And we don't see earning potential being reduced with that kind of policy in place. So why is this happening here? And finally, what comes to mind is the occupational segregation when it comes to work. Like I mentioned earlier, women are concentrated in lower paying industries and occupations, and usually with traditionally more jobs that are traditionally associated with caregiving, which tend to pay less than, you know, the engineering and the finance roles of the world. And this just perpetuates the gender disparities in wages and limits women's access to higher paying and leadership positions, because jobs like teaching or nursing can sometimes have a very different trajectory than that of engineering or finance. We are not putting on a gender lens when we look at how women are entering the workforce, and we look at the women's experience in the workforce and how there is this separation. When we look at women in the workforce, there is a separation of her role at home, whereas we can't do that because both her roles are impacting one another and thus impacting her life. And if we don't want to go too personal, maybe we want to go on a, like a macroeconomic level, this impacts GDP, impacts productivity, and we know this. And yet we are viewing the role of women in work, in the labor force.
I wanted to ask this a bit later, but since you brought up maternity leave, ever since we implemented the highly progressive 90-day maternity leave here in Malaysia, the unfortunate outcome of that seems to be that some reports and surveys have indicated that companies have responded to this by hiring less women and using that as an excuse that women are going to, if I hire women, they're going to get married, they're going to get pregnant, and then they're going to go off for 90 days. Might as well I hire men. How do you see this particular issue?
Yeah, this is, there are problems that, you know, pop up when we try to solve issues in piecemeal. Of course, you know, for us and for a lot of the women groups that we work with, our sister organizations, we're very happy with this move.
Absolutely.
Because it does suggest an understanding of the biological, psychological, emotional needs of women after giving birth, after having a baby, after 9 months of pregnancy. That is good. However, that is again isolating the role of a woman and her relationship with her and her existence as a mother. What about the partner, right? So a lot of the times when we look at maternity leave, in paternity leave need to go hand in hand, or else we are just kind of positioning women in a disadvantageous position, because like you said, employers are just going to say, well, I don't really want to hire a woman because I'm going to have to pay 3 months of her not being here. Whereas for a man, I just need to worry about 7 days. And things like employers, the government really needs to look at how they need to incentivize employers as well. This is something very new. employers, especially the private sector, are going to be very profit driven, are going to just look at what is the bottom line here, right? Am I going to be paying for someone who's not going to be around to push outputs? Or should I just pay for someone who's going to be here? So for them, the answer is very clear. But what we need, they're not going to think about the big picture. That is the role of the state. The role of the state is to, you know, introduce policies and to ensure that those policies are going to benefit the country as a whole. And so when we look at maternity leave, we cannot exclude the conversation of paternity leave as well.
On that note, let's go for a very quick break. On the show with me today is Marina Abdullah, Head of Campaigns at Women's Aid Organization. We will continue this conversation after these messages. Keep it here on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Marina Abdullah, Head of Campaigns at Women's Aid Organization. And in light of International Women's Day observed on the 8th of March, we are talking about bridging the gender pay gap in Malaysia. Marina, before the break, you talked about some of the factors contributing to the widening gender pay gap. How has the COVID-19 pandemic that, you know, the height of the COVID-19 pandemic was 2020 to 2022, around there, but we are still experiencing it to some degree. We are certainly experiencing the fallout of all of it. How did the pandemic exacerbate the gender pay gap?
The pandemic really brought to light the different unequal roles and responsibilities between men and women. But before I go into that, I mean, it's so interesting that at the same time, KPWKM, Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development, is very strategic now and have said that, you know, investing in developing the country's care economy is an important national agenda. That for me says that they're paying attention, because after COVID-19, we saw a lot of glaring realities. We saw things like intensified existing gender inequalities in the workforce in Malaysia, when we see where women are disproportionately impacted in industries where they are overrepresented. So example, retail, hospitality, healthcare, which employ a large number of women, were hit very hard by lockdown, by restrictions, and by reduced consumer spending during the pandemic. And as a result, we saw many women working in these sectors having experienced job losses, reduced hours, decreased income, and therefore a widening gender pay gap. And because of that, we then saw women going back into the either the private sphere to continue on their role in the household as kind of putting in that wearing the shoes of the woman at home and contributing to that, because a lot of the other industries where men were overrepresented were not as impacted badly as that of the ones that women were overrepresented in. So that's one scenario. Mm-hmm. We also then saw women going into informal jobs where then they are not covered. Previously, we had a lot of conversation about the gig economy, the informal sector, and how are we going to actually ensure social protection for this group. A lot of that were what women had to go into because of job losses during the pandemic. And then we also then saw, like I mentioned, the blurred boundaries between work and home. This placed additional caregiving responsibilities on women. So let's say a scenario where mom and dad are in corporate jobs, did not lose their jobs, but they were working from home because that was the only option, right?
Right.
However, schools and childcare facilities were closed or operating at reduced capacity. And at that time, it was very uncertain, you know, when they could rely on having childcare support. We saw women shouldering majority of childcare duties and household chores while juggling professional responsibilities. This, with mental health considerations in place, some women dropped out of the labor force because it didn't seem any more rational to have to juggle both if they had two basically full-time jobs in the same space. So then, you know, this in itself you know, increasing their workload definitely hinders ability to focus and to advance in their career. So we saw that happening during the pandemic. And we also saw women, especially those from marginalized communities or with limited access to technology, face greater challenges in adapting to remote work. This digital divide further widened the gap between men and women in terms of job opportunities, career advancement, and earning potential. Maybe we position this conversation in a rural area. We know that access for men to, you know, go out to public spaces to go and get, you know, last time the head of households were allowed to go out and get, you know, supermarket goods and all that stuff. They would also be able to access, if required, internet connectivity.
Right.
So they were then more connected. The women were mostly left behind to tend to the household and to be with the children. So just this, in this setting itself, it was just making things a lot more worse. It just gave us a deeper look into the realities of men and women in different socioeconomic conditions.
Right. Marina, to understand what's going on, right? Oftentimes, people also look at education levels and the education gap between men and women. But what's interesting about Malaysia is that it seems, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that we have reached a good level of education parity across genders, at least. I believe in public universities, the enrollment rate of women has even surpassed that of men. With that in mind, how did we manage to bridge the education gap between men and women, but that hasn't translated to equal pay for women?
We actually have one of, I can't recall the data, but we do, like you said, have a lot of women who have university degrees.
Right.
In comparison to men, but that's the question, why does it not translate to the workforce? Because what are the barriers? Why is it that I have a degree and I'm not going to jobs, right? We see this strange gap exists because of discrimination.
Right.
We see discrimination when it comes to, like you said, hiring women, promoting women, making decisions about their salaries. There are unequal treatment in the recruitment process, which is why we really want to push for also job seeker discrimination to be covered under the Employment Act, because there's a lot of intricacies of a woman's experience that she brings to the table when she's seeking a job.
Right.
And unfortunately, those intricacies and those complexities of her reality can sometimes be brought to the conversation, though it's irrelevant to the job. Well, she'll be asked, are you married? Oh, are you going to have children? Oh, how many children do you have? We don't see these questions predominantly being asked to men, because the assumption is, well, if you're here, someone else is taking care of your child. Whereas if you're a woman, who's going to take care of your child if you're working, right? There is this implicit bias in it, in hiring practices. So that is a barrier already. We have seen a lot of there's a lot of data that brings to light the need for job seeker discrimination, which usually unfortunately, at that level, will favor men for so many reasons. And now with, you know, maternity leave, it doesn't actually make that gap smaller. There is also limited access to leadership positions, where we know we have that 30% quota that was brought up by the government, by KPWKM. And we see that is the private sector is still lagging behind. The public sector is doing well. They're at about 40-something percent. They've bypassed the quota. But for private sector, we're still lagging behind. And that the question is why? You know, there's this lack of representation of women at the top level of organizations. And so these kind of barriers to the, you know, the glass ceiling, the unconscious bias prevent women from accessing leadership roles, make it also something that is not, you know, working does not seem very like a lucrative or very exciting opportunity because, well, I can only go this far and I'm going to be giving up and having to sacrifice and also take double burden as a wife, a mother, as an employee for what? You know, what is the point if this is only as far as I can get? So we have that also. The numbers are there. The private sector is not doing so well in this aspect. And also, you know, the different, when it comes to barriers to career advancement, we see there's a lot of limited access to training and development programs. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, we have in-house organizations doing mentorship and, you know, networking and all that, some of these male-dominated industries and sectors are usually facilitated or developed for men. There is no gender lens in this conversation where, okay, I just give you a very simple example, like very micro example. If we carry out mentorship or networking events, kind of do it like usually at night, most likely you're not going to have a high intake of women or female participation because someone's going to need to take care of the kids at home. There is that idea, right? So that in itself becomes a barrier for women to attend all of these amazing initiatives that companies have put forth for women to advance in their career. However, not taking into consideration all the added roles and responsibilities that they carry with them as female employees.
Right. How does the concept of the care economy intersect with gender pay gap issues in Malaysia? Perhaps you can also just tell us, for the benefit of those who may not know, what exactly is the care economy?
The care economy is growing as the demand for childcare and care for elderly is increasing in all regions. Why that is important is because we do see some populations where there is a very big older population, an aging population that's coming about, but then birth rates are going down, right? So then what's going to happen? Who is going to take care of the elderly? This is some of the questions that are being taken. And usually we know women are going to take care of the elderly. Women are going to take care of the sick. Women are going to take care of the children. The question, the conversation of the care economy is because of how women tend to take on this role and are unpaid. You know, for us in WAO, we view labor, or we view work where a woman's labor is required.
Right.
And I believe this is something that we share with a lot of our sister organizations as well, because, and this is also behind the concept of the care economy, where a woman's labor is required when she's at home, when she is at her mother's house, where she's taking care of her you know, elderly mom who's maybe falling sick or who's been sick for a long time, and also her work in the formal sector. So this this kind of, we were trying to encourage this new way of economic thinking where work is something that is paid, and societies need to, we need to stop free riding on women's unpaid and underpaid labor and collectively assume the cost of quality care for all. Because if we just assume that women are going to take on this role and at the same time say, well, we need to increase female labor participation, then we're not really paying attention to the two dots that cannot connect itself. And so trying to look at this very largely ignored area, the care economy, for a long time it has been quite ignored. Look at that and see how we can actually have real, practical, sustainable policies that ensure that those who require care support are taken care of, that we boost the care economy by offering paid roles and paid work, And therefore, if we do that, we can see an increase in women participating in the labor force because the care economy is usually dominated by women. So why are we not, you know, why are we not tapping on this when it's just right there in front of us?
So how do we move on from, as you move forward with this, right? What needs to be done to bridge this gender pay gap between men and women in Malaysia? What are the policies that need to be implemented?
Firstly, we need pay equity legislation.
Mm-hmm.
We need to ensure equal pay for equal work, regardless of gender. Then, just kind of putting that out there, really explicitly, and ensuring that the public and private sector are included in this policy and required to abide by it, we can. This is the start of a very important conversation. And then addressing cultural expectations through education. We start from basics, you know, everything from how we perceive women, the examples that we use for men and for women. The other day, we were in a workshop, and someone said, "Well, you know, it starts in school. As a boy in school, I'm always deemed to be naughty, while the girls are deemed to be good."
Mm.
So, as a boy, that journey is kind of already set for you. The tone has been set that you know you are kind of deemed you're just not going to make it that far from an academic standpoint. So a lot of you see a lot of boys dropping out of tertiary education and therefore getting a head start in the workforce, whereas women spend time in university and then, you know, have to come to the workforce with ready barriers. So these cultural expectations from the get-go are very, very important to challenge gender stereotypes and to promote gender equality, not just in the workplace, but at home. And family-friendly policies, really. Childcare support. I know we hear all about it, but we look at the average cost of childcare. It is absolutely insane. I have one daughter, and I am just insane how much we have to pay for childcare for one child.
Right.
And what happens if you know you have a child with a disability or with extra needs? What happens then? You know, you need to diversify your finances to ensure that that child receives that kind of special support, customized support.
Hmm.
What happens? So these family-friendly policies are really important, just like basic needs to ensure that women can participate equally and equitably in the workforce and allowing for more flexible work arrangements. We saw the success of that in some aspect during the COVID-19 pandemic. Knowing that women carry double burden, and honestly, these days we see men doing it as well. It's just, you know, the stats show that women carry, traditionally over years in history, have been carrying double burden for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so flexible work arrangements are policies that are very supportive, actually, of the lived realities of women. If we can actually put these sort of policies in place, And when we do policies to have a gender lens to see what actually are the lived realities of women, what is it of women and men? What is it that they need in order to succeed? We need to look at equality of results. The outcome is what's important. It's not how, because nobody starts, everyone's different. We all don't start at the same starting point. We all start in different ways. Some might be, you know, further front, some might be further back. And if you're a single mom, imagine how far back you're going to be. If you're a single father, how far back you're going to be. So we need to very much focus on equal outcome.
I think that's a very good point you bring up, because oftentimes the focus is just on equality of opportunity and not enough focus is given to equality of outcome, which ties more closely to building an equitable society. On that note, Marina, how do we change the cultural aspect of this, the cultural expectations that women are supposed to stay at home, care for the family, while it's the men's role to go out and be the breadwinner? You also brought up an interesting point earlier about how You know, some industries pay better than other industries, and those industries are seen as more, you know, male. They are male-dominated industries because there's also this cultural aspect, right? Or if you're a guy, you go into engineering.
There are several ways, I guess. It's a multifaceted approach requiring all actors to play a part. When we look from a legal standpoint, we're seeing quite a bit of progress in that sense. But you know, it's not quite enough. We're not hitting, like, maternity leave, for example. Great progress, great policy enacted into law, but where is that other portion, that big missing portion to help drive this forward and to actually ensure that what we want to achieve, increased female labor participation and more support for women, can be achieved through an increase of paternity leave, right? So it's not a piecemeal approach, but a comprehensive approach. And we need that when it comes to all other policies involving women, or all other policies involving the family. Why I say family is because it's very much intersecting with the lived realities of women. And now we can see a growing intersectionality and relatability for men and family. I think it was in 2022, Dawson came out with a report that said that they asked an additional question, why are you not in the workforce? And they answered, about 60,000 men in Malaysia answered that they dropped out of the labor force because of care responsibilities, household responsibilities. So we're now seeing also a shift in how men are participating at home and in the workforce. And with just that kind of indication, all the policies involving, you know, men, involving women, involving people with disabilities, and then looking at different geographies like rural area, urban area, we need to craft policies that take into consideration the diverse needs of all of these groups. Women is a very important starting point because we know historically women are more marginalized than men. However, policies shouldn't be protective, meaning only focused on women, trying to protect them, trying to, you know, kind of keep them away from the real world, but actually to how do we actively involve them and integrate them into what is the rest of the world, if that makes sense.
Right. Would you have a final message for us?
The final message is try to just look, like when we look at men and women, we need to look beyond that, beyond them being a man and them being a woman. What are some of their actual lived realities beneath that? As a woman, are you a single mother? What's your ethnic group? What is your age group? Where do you live? What's your level of education? What's your family background? Were you raised in an abusive family? What are all of these factors? What's your level of language, you know, literacy? When we look at these things and we view people in a more comprehensive and more complex way, I know it seems like, oh, you're banyak kerja, but when you do that, your policies are meeting the needs. The policies must meet the needs. If not, there are just a lot of resources being wasted. And like you said, this whole conversation and positioning of equal opportunities, it's great to have opportunities, but we kind of need to move on from that conversation. What's next? What have these opportunities resulted in? Are women also entering the workforce? Are women also being upskilled to take on leadership positions? Are women being supported to also carry the burden of being a mother and also taking on those leadership positions? Because we're telling women, please take on leadership positions. We need 30% quota in private sector. But sorry, we're not going to give you any support for your role as a mother, which you have to take on because of cultural expectations, right? I know, like, I can imagine if, you know, someone's listening to this and say, well, that's not the reality of my family.
Right.
I take care, as a guy, I take care. I stay at home. I do the laundry and everything. Absolutely, that's wonderful. That is not the majority. The reality of the majority, unfortunately.
Marina, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Dasharan. It was really good talking to you.
That was Marina Abdullah, Head of Campaigns at the Women's Aid Organization. On a separate but related note, there will be a March for Equality happening this Saturday, organized by Women's March Malaysia. You can check out their social media pages, Women's March My, for more information. The march is happening at SOGO this Saturday. I'm Dasharan Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.